CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
The CoinWorld Podcast is delighted to be back again for another episode. I'm Jeff Stark.
And I'm Larry Jewett, and I'm really looking forward to this episode here because, you know, it's something that's new and exciting and we're on the cutting edge, so to speak. We're not, but the people involved in it are. And we were able to take some of the time to get some information about that. So we want to invite you to listen to the interview we have coming up with Katie Rabucci. And I'm not going to steal her thunder in any way, manner, shape, or form, except to say that you owe it to yourself to listen to what she has to say here, because these are some exciting times coming your way. And we always have a lot of excitement here. We want to thank everybody for listening to us and keeping us on your most often heard podcast list here. And thanks to all of our sponsors, especially CoinWorld Plus. We sometimes neglect them, unfortunately, but CoinWorld Plus is an exciting development that's happened in the numismatic world. And I'm going to give a shout out to one of our recent developments that our subscribers are getting in with their magazines, and that's the CoinWorld Trends. And CoinWorld Trends, if for those who are not familiar with it, the value analysis of certain coins from 1970 on, and we've expanded that a little bit more. And if you're a subscriber of the monthly issue, it comes right along with it. If you're not a subscriber of the monthly issue, well, you owe it to yourself to find out more about that. Simply sign up for a subscription, and that'll get you the CoinWorld monthly issue as well as the trends. Man, I got to give a shout out to you. I'm not going to, you know, by the time this airs, the world is going to see the results of your hard work. Now, you chastised me a couple of weeks ago because I was stealing your thunder on one of the stories that you had in the issue. But man, oh man, you are a machine this month. I mean, I'm going to keep this issue because you've got some great stories in there that our readers are going to be enjoying here.
Oh, now, you know, before I talk about myself, my favorite subject, right? You know, trends, I can't let it go without saying how I assume that is why you have the circles under your eyes this week, all the fun putting that together. So good for you. It's a labor of love, a lot of work, and something new and different for folks to really understand the valuing side in a deeper way. It's not just a list of values. There's an exploration every month in literally market trends, what's up, what's down, and some of the factors driving those changes. So good for you. Pat you on the back. You've patted me on the back. There were three larger stories in the monthly issue for July. The aforementioned Hawaiian numismatics. I got to appropriately explore the world of women on modern coins, on modern world coins in the world coin section. So I looked at six different women who appeared on modern world coins, everybody from Princess Diana to Benazir Bhutto to Marie Curie. So that's half of the list. You'll have to subscribe or pick it up, you know, otherwise to learn more. And then, of course, in the paper money section, I had the trifecta this month: the main issue cover story, the WorldCoin cover story, and the paper money cover story. That was all about Scottish banknotes. And there's a curious fact relating to their issuance that I explored. And I also got to explore the reality that there's no longer there is a 1 pound coin, I should say, in the United Kingdom, but the 1 pound note is no longer used in Great Britain, but it is used in Scotland to some very, very slight degree. And so we looked at the last 1 pound notes that were issued from the three banks that can issue banknotes in Scotland. So it was a way to touch upon Scottish banknote history and also look at it through a modern lens with the understanding, gosh, you know, we just talked to Cameron McLean recently, would love to go to Scotland. I doubt I will encounter £1 notes in circulation based on my research, but it was fun to put that together as well. So thank you for shining a little light on that. Hopefully there's something for everyone in the monthly issue. That's, you know, that's what we do. If maybe you're not into Scottish notes, well, maybe you're into modern world coins, and maybe you want to explore the Aloha numismatic. So,
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When I got into the story about the ladies, I got to the end of it and I couldn't help but wonder if this Marie Curie coin, if you have to pick it up with lead gloves or anything like that. But among the things that you didn't write in this issue are two of the exciting developments that have happened. And that was in relation to hoards. We heard about this massive gold coin hoard with a couple of silver coins in there in the state of Kentucky. And then there was the story that attracted national news and news on the local and outside of the numismatic world. And that was the discovery of approximately 1 million coins, most of them being copper cents, and what the status was going to be of that. So, you know, oftentimes in my recent numismatic reading, when I hear the word hoard, I tend to think of someplace like on the British Isles, or, you know, someplace on continental Europe. I don't think generally, you know, obviously there have been some hoards in the U.S., but generally here lately, it seems to me like most of the hoarding has been discovered over in Europe. Am I off base on this one, since, you know, you do a lot with the world?
Well, you know, the Saddle Ridge hoard here in the U.S. is another instance of a hoard being found here. And there are certainly stories of discoveries, hoards being found in the U.S. over the years, but there absolutely are far more hoards, at least publicly known, in the United Kingdom and to a lesser extent Europe and elsewhere. There are a lot of hoards, as we've learned from talking with our folks in the ancient coin realm and speaking from a cultural property standpoint. There are a lot of hoards of ancient coins that enter the marketplace without a specific legal framework dictating the process for that and the disposal or disbursement of those. In the United Kingdom, they have a system set up where local officials, coroners, are called in to monitor hoards when they're found. There's a strict legal definition of when it comes to quantity and age of coins that qualifies or constitutes a hoard. It's a very public, open process that rewards both the finder and the landowner while recognizing a need to meet certain archaeological standards. It's many folks look at it as a fine model for what could be implemented elsewhere if robust systems were in place to ensure the proper remuneration. Basically, you know, that you didn't have corrupt officials taking stuff, you didn't have items that were seized and not, you know, the finders not rewarded. There are certainly instances in history where there are governments and officials that have done that. So, you know, you have to have a strong legal framework for this in certain nations, and maybe that's lacking in some of them, but certainly it works well in the United Kingdom. That's why we see so many news stories out of there. We have a writer in London who, from time to time, we're fortunate to have him weigh in on some hoards that are found there, whether that's the Shropshire gold piano hoard. This is, I think, something like 900 sovereigns that were found inside a piano donated to an organization. There was a $300,000 hoard found beneath the kitchen floor of 17th and 18th century English gold coins. There's just so many stories. It's been more than a dozen hoard stories in my time at CoinWorld, at least, if not two dozen. There's been finds of gold coins near the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. There's, and this is just the stuff that we've been able to get an official statement on, official pronouncement, images and all that. There are a lot of other stories we see that cannot be verified. So I always am reluctant to incorporate those into a discussion about the hordes because, you know, if you think about it, somebody could, I'm not saying this has happened in these cases, but somebody could use a horde discovery to sort of, you know, money launder or otherwise create a system or framework for illegal activity. So there's a lot of stuff out there. And, you know, some of the places, obviously, it helps that we have a man in London that can press authorities for this. It's in English. So even though we're nations separated by a common language, there's enough stuff to find out about those hordes online and connect with the outlets that are, whether it's being turned over to a university authority or usually, I mean, the process is it goes to the coroner and then they forward to the British Museum experts and all that, the portable antiquity scheme. But in certain other areas, we've had to be creative to try to connect with folks who actually have an official role in some of these hordes. There's so many out there, though, and I would again be a proponent of a British style system in those places that could honor it and see that it were handled properly. Again, to encourage, you know, to reward the financial side of it, but encourage an archaeological context be honored as well.
Awesome. Well, we invite you to take a look and get more information on those latest hoard findings in our latest issue right now. But again, we've got an interview coming up here with Katie Rabucci, and she's got some important information that we could tell you about with our interview here. So we invite you to stay tuned. But right now, one of our regular features on the Coin World podcast is a little drop back into history here. And Jeff's been doing his research on top of doing all the writing that he's been doing, and he's come up with a nugget to share with us. What you got?
Well, yeah. So let's go to June 19th. And this is keeping in, you know, we've talked a lot about the United Kingdom, Great Britain. Let's go to Great Britain. And let's go to 1797 when copper coin production began at Matthew Bolton's Soho Mint. The Soho Mint was in Birmingham, a big industrial town. That town was the, you know, really the center of the Industrial Revolution as we know it. And Bolton and Watt were, you know, they made coins, they made buttons, they made all sorts of anything that could be created on a press, mechanized systems. And what did they make in this particular case? Well, you have the 1 and 2 ounce whopper, copper whoppers, I call them. They're these just ginormous, chunky coins. And you think about, there was a shortage of coinage at the time. The Royal Mint was not making coins like they should have. There was a need for copper coinage. That's why we have Condor tokens. I think we've talked about those before on the show, of course. And so what happened, you had private individuals step up and fill the gap with those tokens. Well, in this case, the large copper pennies and two pence, known as cartwheels, these were officially sanctioned by the government. They were struck by Bolton and Watt, and the production of that began on June 19, 1797. They have George III on them facing right. They have Britannia on the back, on the reverse. And the letters are in cuse, which is like sunk below the surface. They're really a milestone in coinage history. And, you know, for somebody who, even if you don't collect world coins to any degree, these are one of those sort of like 20 coins you could look at as coins that change the coinage history. And so, they're 1 and 2 pence. The 1 pence, I believe, was 1 ounce. and the 2 pence was 2 ounce. I think that's how it worked. They're just enormous. You can find them well worn. They were used in circulation quite a bit. There was this strong demand, strong need for the copper coinage and silver coinage as well. So that's why I keyed in on that for this week in numismatic history.
Good choice, no doubt about that. So appreciate you sharing that. It's always interesting to hear, but going back quite a ways on that one. We're going to go back to the year 1995 as we take a look back into coin world history, because it doesn't extend back into the 1790s, but 1995, almost 30 years ago, but a lot of things were happening on this week in coin world history.
Yeah, it's always a delight. That was a random number we came up with. It's fun to look at these back issues and see some of what topics were in the news. And hindsight is always 2020 to allow us to see how things played out or didn't. And then two of the headlines on the cover of the issue really connect with that idea. Bill seeks to reintroduce Indian head 5 cent coin. That's a legislative bill, not a person named Bill. The proposal called for 90% silver versions of the Indian head 5 cent coin, the so-called Buffalo nickel that would circulate from 1998 to 2000. Well, that did not happen, we know, but we do know that the design was used for a silver dollar commemorative. So I didn't realize there had been this push or suggestion that the design would be issued in a silver 5 cent version. And I think how it worked out was, you know, it's nice. It's on that silver dollar, which is a much larger canvas, if you will, to appreciate the design of the classic coin. You also have a headline says Treasury rejects replacing $1 note with coin. Well, we know that still hasn't happened here, as you note, almost 30 years down the road. But there was a new dollar coin issued just, you know, a handful of years after this publication of the June 19th, 95 issue. So, you know, it's always fun to see what was going on then. I'm certain if it wasn't this issue, I was around this time. I was a subscriber to CoinWorld because I was a subscriber amid the whole 1995 double die cent era. But I don't remember this. That was, you know, 27 years ago. Is that right? 28 years ago. So long time ago in any event. So that's what jumped out to me. What about you on the letters page, Larry?
Boy, we have a very interesting letter. It says, pinball discovery triggers collecting. Now, you may know, I spent some time at the Pinball Museum and Hall of Fame recently and got the t-shirt. But this one struck my attention here because it says, I was delighted to see Robert Archer's discussion of William Wood's Hibernia coinage in the May 8th issue of Coin World. It was on account of a 1722 Hibernia halfpenny that I began collecting coins over 20 years ago. When I was 9 years old, I began working in my family's arcade in Hull, Massachusetts. One of my jobs was to empty out the coin boxes from the pinball and video machines. While doing that, I watched out for slugs, usually copper quarter-sized planchets, because they could jam the coin counting machines. One day, I found an unusual slug. One side clearly had a portrait, but the legends were illegible. The reverse clearly said Hibernia and 1722 and displayed a seated figure with a harp. Being curious naturally, I went to the next door arcade where I knew they had a book on coins as part of their skee-ball stock. I haven't figured that part out yet. A few minute conversation with the owner and I received my first copy of the Red Book. I found my slug listed among the colonial coinage with a value then of about $20. I remember reading the book cover to cover and being amazed at the history of U.S. coinage, a history that I had no clue about previously. Of course, I spent the rest of that summer and many summers to follow being very careful to check the coin boxes for similar treasures. While I never found anything quite as interesting, I steadily built up a stockpile of U.S. silver coinage. That's taking advantage of the situation you have right there for sure. And every now and again would get an odd foreign coin. Whoever traded that 250-year-old halfpenny for 25 cents worth of pinball also bought me a lifetime of collecting pleasure. All in all, not a bad deal. That comes from David McDonald of Far Hills, New Jersey. I thought that was a pretty neat thing. I mean, I know how we like to find things in certain change machines or, you know, every now and again, used to be the old days looking in the payphones to see if there was a dime or a quarter in there that maybe was kind of unusual, got rejected for whatever reason. But here's a story from 1995 that goes back to when a guy found a 1722 Hibernia halfpenny. Wow.
How cool is that? So I think it would be absolutely easy to fall into the hobby with such an introduction, right?
No doubt.
That is too cool. Now, I think it's time that I put you to the test, though, and we're going to see if, as a, you know, as an adjunct to or a follow-up to last episode when we spoke with Josh McMorrow Hernandez about American Silver Eagles, I talked about the which ones were common or which ones were rare, I should say, of both the you know, the proof side and the bullion side. We talked a little bit about both of those, but the question I asked you last week was which bullion coin, which bullion version year has the highest mintage, and in tenths of a millions, hundred thousands, with give me a number, something got something, and you know, if you get within 100,000 of it, I'll give you credit for it. Which Silver American Eagle is the absolute most common one out there? Do you have any idea?
I'm going to guess it's going to be from in the 2000s because, I mean, they were building up popularity from 86 on. Probably somewhere around 2013, 2014, maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, I could probably go to the Red Book and find out, but...
You're right, but you named a couple of years. Pick one and then throw me a number on the mintage and we'll see how close you got.
Okay, I'll go with the later one in that case. I'll go with 2014 and I'm going to say they probably made not quite 50 million, maybe 48 million.
Okay, well, you get half credit, you get partial credit. You got the year right, but 2014, there were 54.15 million made and sold. I mean, I can remember when silver spiked, you know, 2011, and there was mad dash there. Certainly 2014 silver production had been 42, some almost 43 million the year before, and almost 38 million the year before that. They'd been up around 40 million from 2011 on, but 2014 was the peak. Then it settled off to, you know, 37.7 million, then 18 million. Then it's bopped up and down and around since then. But the high water mark for bullion is 2014. You got that part right. You did not get the mintage. That's 54.1 million. So there you go. This, though, I think you'll have no problem getting. You know, stay tuned. You'll understand why I ask. But I just talked about women on modern world coins. What U.S. coin was the first to show an actual woman that had lived in history? Not a depiction of Liberty, not somebody who posed for the image of Liberty, but an actual woman by name. What coin was that? Who was that person? This is sort of a layup, a gimme. I think you should get it. Everybody out there listening, if you've paid any attention to any amount of the hobby. And if you don't get it, please don't think I'm disparaging you. Everybody comes at it at a different point. But if you have not heard it yet, well, now you'll get to. But certainly it's one of those fun trivia questions that I think is something that's often introduced earlier in the hobby journey. Not always. Maybe you will come up with it, though, And yeah, think about that during our interview with Katie Rubucci. Here that interview is.
Coin World Podcast is excited with the developments that we've been witnessing here lately, and we've been very fortunate enough to make contact with Katie Rubucci. And Katie is here on the Coin World Podcast on short notice. Katie, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the podcast on short notice.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the reason we have Katie on the podcast here today, a little backstory on this. I happen to be sitting here, the Coin Dealers Helping Coin Dealers social media page had it open, and I saw a post that was there by the president of Legend Rare Coin Auctions, Jessica Berkman, announcing the formation of a new organization that I think is of great interest to our listeners and to the numismatic community in general. Katie, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about this.
Well, we are starting an organization called Women of Numismatics, and we are looking to promote the interests of both female coin dealers as well as collectors as well. So,
well, that's obviously something that there's a definite need for, because women have been making inroads in business and in many areas here, and certainly the aspect of it with the collectors intrigues me, because I think they never had a voice in any type of an organization like this before.
Yeah, absolutely not. My mom is a coin collector, and this is something that, as we've been doing this, I've been thinking of her a lot, because she had never been to a coin show until she came to visit me at the Cromwell show in Connecticut as a dealer. So this woman who brought me into numismatics had never herself been to a coin show while identifying as one for my entire life.
Since the organization is basically so new, I mean, there's still a lot to be determined and a lot. So not trying to put you on the spot here, but the idea of the Women of Numismatics, what are some of the goals and objectives for the early part of this? Obviously, they're going to change through time.
We want to encourage women who are both dealers and collectors to be informed, educated, and to feel welcomed into the numismatic community. We're focusing on, you know, educational programs, as well as mentoring and scholarship opportunities. We're taking a big focus on engagement and young numismatists outreach for this. We were talking, the four of us, Melissa Kahn, Julia Smith, and as you mentioned earlier, Jessica from Legend. We were all talking, and this part is really, that's really important, is the outreach. There was a time when there wasn't really any women in numismatics. Catherine Bulova was the sort of the first one to break into this industry professionally, and she's always had this focus. She always had a focus on encouraging this.
Now, you mentioned earlier, one of the things, there have been organizations and there are organizations in this hobby, but the idea of bringing along the collector, I think the collectors had not had a voice here. Where did that idea come from?
Well, we were talking at one of the shows in Baltimore, not this past one, but last fall, we were talking, and it was just that there really had been no place and no voice for young numismatists, female numismatists, and young women and collectors. They've always been involved in, but the field has been defined and dominated by men. So it can be really overwhelming or scary to get involved. So we're trying to give a voice to female dealers and collectors.
So I have to ask, I see you sort of grew up in the hobby with your mother was involved in the hobby. Not to gatekeep and not to sort of challenge your authority, but can you just explain how you got into collecting and what area you like to collect? Because I know that we collectors like to hear how other people got into this and what excites them and motivates them. That's really what I'm curious about.
Oh, I could talk to you for days about this. My journey into this hobby and eventually into the profession has been really exciting and interesting. A very common story is, you know, my mom was a collector and her father before her is a collector. You know, casual collectors, they enjoy United States coins, stuff from her childhood in my grandfather's safe. There's still a Buffalo nickel with my name on it, given to me as a child. So that's where my family started. But my journey into numismatics began primarily when I was 16. I walked into Higleyville Coin in Simsbury, Connecticut, which is a coin shop and pharmacy owned by my mentor, Bob Kevorkian. And he, over the years, I went in and I kept visiting him. He took the time out. Eventually, I began working for him at the pharmacy and going to local shows. So I met a lot of people who did a lot of outreach, particularly John Frost from Barber Collectors Society and Liberty Seated. He did a lot to educate me and keep me wanting to come back to shows. So there were a lot of people who took an interest in me and continuing to educate me.
So I do find that interesting. You mentioned a coin shop / pharmacy. That's how appropriate, since coins are rather addictive like drugs, huh?
Exactly.
I knew you were going to go there. I mean, in the part of that story, obviously, you had some great mentors there, but I can't help but notice that the fact that they were male. Can you imagine the day coming up here with the strength of women on the numismatics where young ladies can have female mentors?
That's exactly it. We were talking and I asked the group of us how many of us came in to coins on our own merit without the, I went to my first coin show with Bob and Melissa. Her father is in the industry. And same thing with Jessica, was the only person who came in on her own merit outside of having a man to bring her in, which I feel it's incredible and I'm excited that it happens, but it's rare. I don't think I would have been as likely to go to a coin show all by myself. It can be very intimidating. I feel even sometimes alone behind a table that I'm not taken as seriously.
That's an interesting perspective right there when you look around and seeing so many. And then you think about the young ladies who want to get involved in this. Abby Zekman comes to my mind when I start thinking about this. And, you know, Alexandria Zeman that's down here with her own shop in St. Augustine. And I think about what they had to go through here. And one thing, when you're talking about young collectors, it's often that the Boy Scouts have a merit badge, but that's not necessarily as conducive to a young lady getting involved in it as perhaps a young man. So it's just interesting that the times have changed from, you know, some of the things that we've seen. And there's a definite need for an organization like Women of Numismatics to encourage more involvement in this hobby or in this business, depending on what you choose here. So Go ahead, Katie.
I see just as much interest in young girls as I do in young boys at shows and coming into the shop. You definitely see the interest in kids of all ages. I don't know what happens and where it doesn't translate, but it's definitely something that's appealing to a lot of people. I think the issue is where it translates from a casual collector into more serious collecting.
I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're active in social media and like Instagram. Are you Stella Numismatics?
I am Stella Numismatics on Instagram.
How has that community there been welcoming to you particularly and young folks in particular and then women in general?
I don't want to speak too much on my experience on Instagram because I very small account. And I also have the benefit of my boyfriend, James, who's also on Instagram as Costello's Coins and Bullion. We work together. We have a shop. He has a shop in Sayville with his mentor, Chris, who's Long Island Coin on Instagram. They are kind of, they have some, I don't know what the word is, some presence on Instagram. So I'm there, but I'm really sort of, I watch more than I participate. But Instagram is a great place for connecting a lot of young and promising numismatists. I know lots of people who we've been able to keep up that I've met at shows, see what they're doing. And it gives, the internet has made the world a lot smaller. So I think it makes it more accessible for people to get into an actual coin show, where you'll find somebody on Instagram and realize that they're set up at a show an hour or two from you, and you can actually get there.
Awesome. Right. It does make the world a lot smaller, that's for sure. So here we are. We're talking about, though, growing. And again, it was social media that allowed us to make the connection. So we want to think, how can we have people who are interested in becoming part of Women of Numismatics, how can they get involved? What can they do? Is there a way that they can contact somebody so that we can get this started and get the ball rolling to help everybody in the hobby?
Yes. Anyone who has any interest in this organization can send an email to womenofnumismatics, it's all one word, @gmail.com. Memberships will start January 2024.
Awesome. And are there any plans right now to try to do something at the ANA in Pittsburgh, or is that a little too soon given how quickly this all just developed in the last few days, weeks?
We will be in Pittsburgh. So I believe all four of us will be there at the show in some capacity. So please come find us, talk to us. I know we will be there.
Okay. Well, we'll be definitely looking for you there and looking, maybe there'll be some ways to stay in touch online. We're excited to, you know, I'm going to fill out an application, and we wanted to get the word out about the organization, especially there hasn't been an organization, gosh, this year. I guess Women in Numismatics ended about a year ago, I think. And so there's definitely a gap to be filled, a place to call your own.
And a really exciting opportunity for collectors and people in numismatics in general.
And that's great. Once again, the email address that you can get directly connected to Women of Numismatics is Women of Numismatics, all one word, and that's @gmail. Katie, I want to thank you for your time here. And certainly this is going to be a story we're going to keep an eye on here, because this is some great excitement for the numismatics, both on the hobby side of the things, as collectors can now have a chance to meet up and mingle with those who are really movers or shakers on the business side of the business as well. So Katie, thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you out at the show soon.
Thank you.
And that was our interview with Katie Robucci. What do you say, Larry?
I say you've got a very exciting development happening here, especially for ladies interested in the idea of numismatics, regardless of where you might be. I know that my wife is probably going to be quickly to join the group here, as we'll be seeing them at the ANA show, at the ANA World's Fair of Money in Pittsburgh, and they're going to be a fixture in the numismatic landscape here. And a reminder once again, if you are interested in finding out more information about this group and the efforts being put forth by the individuals that were mentioned in Katie's interview, you can contact them at Women of Numismatics. That's all one word, Women of Numismatics. That's at gmail.com. So again, this is an effort that's going to be put forth to really help out the hobby on a number of fronts. And certainly it's exciting times when those are taking the steps to go forward to do this. And we thank them for the time. that they spent giving the information to us here, because again, this is a relatively new development here. So there's some ideas that are going to come out of this. Some suggestions are going to be made as membership continues to grow. And it's going to be interesting to say we were right there for the building block of Women of Numismatics.
Absolutely. So, you know, we say it every episode, this is a Big Tent Hobby. We love the more people are involved, the better. We want to encourage people to find their niche, find their place. There's a place for everyone in the hobby. And hopefully, you know, there's lots of success right out of the gate for this new organization.
Well, we definitely thank you for listening here today, but today happens to be the start of Collectorama, so I'm going to get out the door here very, very soon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of it. Until next time,
happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect. Manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.